So now we are on the air, and we will start with today's lecture on the development of mandible. Now, the development of mandible is somewhat more complicated than what you last heard about the development of maxilla. Which maxilla is, of course, a straight membranous bone, and aside from the fact that there is some chondroid bone formation, it's really not terribly complicated. But in the case of the mandible, there are some complications, and because of that, we are doing this as a separate session. The development of the mandible and the temporomandibular joints involves several steps, and one step you have already heard about. Much of the mandible, the body of the mandible, and a good part of the ramus of the mandible are formed by intramembranous ossification. And as I already indicated before, there is transdifferentiation in some areas, particularly in the area around the developing teeth. But then there are some other factors that come in. One is the development of secondary cartilage, and we will define secondary cartilage in a moment, and then we'll see the example of it. And the secondary cartilage is going to form the condyle. So the condyle is going to be formed in a somewhat different way than the rest of the mandible. And finally, we are going to look at the development of the temporomandibular joint. And in order to understand the development of a temporomandibular joint, first of all, you have to learn how normal joints develop. And then secondly, you have to understand the unique position that this joint takes in both in evolution and in the embryologic development, which is somewhat parallel to what we see in evolution. So these are the various topics. We have already talked about the intramembranous ossification, so we start with secondary cartilage. But before I do it, I am image oriented, and so I will show you the three steps here in images. This is, of course, chondroid bone that you typically find in the mandible. This is a black and white picture. It comes from a very old but very, very classic publication on the development of the condyle. And that's what you're seeing here. So here is the development of secondary cartilage near the membrane bone. And finally, here is a picture from our own collection, which shows how this condyle that can be related to this here, this structured with the arrow, this is going to be the condyle. But right next to it, you see an older articulation, which this new condyle that's going to be part of the TMJ is going to replace. I'll start with secondary cartilage. Secondary cartilage is called secondary for a very interesting reason. It appears later in development. Okay, primary cartilage starts earlier. It is found between 6 and 7 weeks. And secondary cartilage generally is formed in the period between 10 and 20 weeks. So there is an actual time lag in the development of these cartilages. The secondary cartilage forms under the influence of motion. As you know, cartilage tends to form under the influence of compression, intermittent compression. But what you find here is that once cartilage is formed, it tends to be fairly stable in normal functional conditions. But secondary cartilages will develop in areas of relative motion, and the motion must continue. It must be maintained by motion. So that is a critical thing. Secondary cartilage, therefore, is not a stable cartilage. It will disappear if there is no longer motion in the area. Sometimes people ask, when they look at slides, how can you tell it's primary or secondary cartilage? That is a very tricky identification, which we will certainly not hold you responsible for here. If you put two pieces of cartilage next to each other, one primary and one secondary, you find that the secondary is somewhat more cellular than the primary cartilage. It has larger lacunae and less extracellular matrix. So if you can look at both cartilages simultaneously, and compare them as being from the same individual, you can tell which is primary and which is secondary. But there are so many variations in cartilage, and depending on the age of the individual, depending on the location, that this is really not something that I would like to hold you to. Another thing that you find in secondary cartilage is that there is, in fact, in addition to the typical cartilage collagens, type 2, type 9, type 11, and in the future type 10, it has type 1 collagen. So the extracellular matrix is mixed. It isn't pure cartilage. There is type 1 collagen in the cartilage. Okay? Somewhat similar to fibrocartilage. Fibrocartilage has a fair amount of type 1 collagen. Secondary cartilage has type 1 collagen. And now let's look at item 2 and item 4. The relative motion makes the cell produce more type 2, type 9, and type 11 collagen. And so the production of cartilage-like collagens occurs by cells under the influence of motion. If motion, or indeed function, stops and the cartilage is no longer loaded as it should be, this also stops the formation of the cartilage collagens. And so what you gradually get is less and less cartilage collagens and more type 1 collagen. And so you go back to a tissue which is essentially regular connective tissue, not secondary cartilage. And that's something that has been particularly well demonstrated with the condyle of the mandible. If you just play around with the nature of the diet, and you give a very soft or fluid diet to an individual, gradually the condyle will become more and more type 1 collagen, and it's no longer really an articular cartilage. Hard diet, that works fine, and you keep having nice cartilage. Secondary cartilage is formed transiently in many places. And this is actually an area, this is a coronal section of a rat cranium. You're seeing here some of the flat bone developing on the edges. But here in the area of the future suture, you see a little bit of cartilage, a little nodule of cartilage. Okay? And so frequently you find secondary cartilages in locations where you will not find them later on, but they are there transiently, indicating that there is some motion in the area. Motion stops, probably the development of the edges of the suture. You know, the two sutural edges are moving relative to each other, and so this bit of cartilage gets formed. But once that cartilage is no longer subject to motion, it will disappear. Typical transient secondary cartilage. And we will see that also in the development of the mandible. Now, I've mentioned already secondary cartilage importantly for the development of the temporomandibular joint. I am going to add to that here that it is true for all of the joints. Normal joint development starts out in a situation where you first have primary cartilage model, so this model of one cartilage bone, and here's the model of the other in these darker regions. And between these two cartilage models, in the area of the future joint, this here is the future joint, and in the area of the future joint, what you have is essentially loose mesenchymal tissue. It's called here intermediate zone. Now, that's the first stage. That's when you first have those primary cartilage models that are going to form long bones, for example. In the subsequent stage, and this is, again, of course, prenatal, you find that the original primary cartilage now gets a condensation, and a secondary layer forms on top of it. So there is, in fact, during the joint development, some mesenchymal cells from the intermediate zone between the models becomes condensed onto the original cartilage model, and that secondary outer layer that is formed here is, in fact, secondary cartilage. It forms under the influence of motion. Muscles are already contracting, motion is beginning to occur, and you have secondary cartilage forming here. And so that's the next thing. So intermediate zone is becoming somewhat narrower. And then the next stage that occurs in joint development is that the intermediate zone begins to develop spaces. Spaces filled with hyaluronic acids, and that's going to be the synovial cavity. So you have two steps. Step one, the formation of secondary cartilage on the original skeletal elements. Step two, the formation of a joint cavity. And we will see that in the temporomandibular joint. But to illustrate that, you have here two images of a knee joint. I know you're not responsible for a knee joint, but here is one of the cruciate ligaments crossing through the space. Here is the primary cartilage model. Here is another primary cartilage model. And you're beginning to see here, on the surface of that primary cartilage model, you begin to see condensed mesenchyme. And this is the intermediate zone in between. And once that condensed mesenchyme has formed and has started to form cartilage, you actually can see a new layer of cartilage on top of the old primary cartilage. So this is the secondary cartilage, and this is the primary cartilage. And now you find that in the area that used to be occupied by mesenchyme, now you find a space. So this is a joint space, and you are in business. Okay? So understand the steps in the formation of a joint. A joint of the mandible, that the mandible is involved in, is the temporomandibular joint. And it is developmentally and phylogenetically a new joint, present only in vertebrates. It developed over a period of 120 million years from the time when we had primitive mammal-like reptiles running around in the world until such time that we started having through mammals. I'm showing you here a series of pictures to make the comparison. The mammal-like reptile is on the bottom. The mammal, the future condition, is shown on top. And what you're seeing here is the lower jaw of the mammal-like reptile was composed of a tooth-bearing bone, the dentary, but then there was a whole series of post-dentary bones, bones that were kind of added on. You're seeing here, and you see one here, and they all have different names, and there's only a few that we absolutely must name here, and one is the articular. This bone right here, the articular, is important because it is going to change its function, and we find that there's another bone which is in the skull, and would be in the skull over here, and that will be known as the quadrate. That is, these two, the articular and the quadrate, actually form the primitive skull in a mammal-like reptile. Now, in the mammal, situation has completely cleared up, because all you're having is a single bone, and the single bone that you have is the dentary. So the only bone that really remains is the tooth-bearing bone, and all the other post-dentary bones are gone. You don't have to worry about it anymore. It's very nice, okay? Osteology just became simpler. But then there is, if you get rid of all these post-dentary bones, then you have to form a new joint. And so you have to form a new joint between part of this dentary and the temporal bone. And here is the part of the dentary that is going to be the new component of the temporomandibular joint. This is a slightly simpler diagram. Again, here you see the dentary in the mammal, and here you see the condyle in the dentary that articulates with the temporal bone. Here's the temporal bone, and then the condyle is here. In the older situation, the articular was here, and the quadrate was over here. It was part of the regular skull, and here are all these other post-dentary bones that they don't even bother to mention. Now, what happens? Nature is extremely conservative. It likes to keep these things, even though it's not using them anymore. And so what happened in the mammal-like reptile, there was a situation where we had a quadrate articular joint, that was one, and then we had in the middle ear one ossicle, and that ossicle was what we now call the stapes. So there was only a stapes to transmit sound to the tympanic membrane in the ear. From the tympanic membrane in the ear, I'm sorry. Now, what we have done, we have taken this old joint in the mammal-like reptile, and we have incorporated that in the middle ear of the mammal. And so the old quadrate articular joint, which was a jaw joint, has now been incorporated, and we now have the incus, which is the old quadrate, and the malleus, which is the old articular, incorporated in the middle ear. So instead of having only one single ossicle, the stapes, we now have an ossicular chain. And the ossicular chain is much more delicate in transmitting vibrations. This has to do also with the fact that we are no longer aquatic individuals. Although even the early mammal-like reptiles, what they would do to hear, they would put their ear on the ground to pick up the vibrations. We don't have to do it anymore. It would look pretty funny if we had to. Okay, so that is the evolution of the jaw joints. And what we find is that, in fact, in development of the human lower jaw, we have, and indeed all mammalian lower jaws, we have, in fact, a situation that mimics the older developments and goes parallel for a certain distance. This is an ancient image of a chondrocranium. I happen to like it. It's not 100% beautiful and perfect, but it's good enough. And what I like about it is that what you're seeing here, on the outside of the otic capsule, you see two little structures that form a joint. And then here, one of these structures continues on as Meckel's cartilage. And this is the quadrate, and here is the articular. And what you find is that in the period between roughly 5 weeks until, say, 12 weeks, and a little bit beyond that even, you have, in fact, this primitive joint. And this primitive joint is a joint that serves the primitive lower jaw until such time that it is being replaced by the new temporomandibular joint. So this joint is, in fact, in place. And for a while, as the new temporomandibular joint is developing, you have two joints. And they're kind of going on side by side. Here's another picture again. You're seeing here again the articular. Here is the quadrate. And this is Meckel's cartilage, so you get the general idea. Now, as you know, and you already are aware of it, the mandible starts forming on the outside of Meckel's cartilage, buckled to Meckel's cartilage. And so that first membrane bone forms literally on the outside of Meckel's cartilage, and that's what happens. And where does it start to form? Well, last time you heard that the first ossification center of a membrane bone tends to form in the area immediately surrounding what is going to be the foramen. And it is the mental foramen that is the site where the first bone of the mandible begins to form. Right where that mental nerve branches off the inferior alveolar nerve, again, an area of great stability. Whenever you have a nerve branch crossing the site of the future periosteum, that's an area of great stability and a site that favors bone formation. And so bone is being formed first around this branch. And then gradually the bone will start to grow out in, again, typical radial patterns, posteriorly, anteriorly, and a little bit occlusally. And we saw this picture last time. We don't have to debate it much longer. Here again, this is the first area of bone to form, and then the mandible just extends anteriorly and posteriorly until it meets its outside boundaries. Now I'm going to share with you the pictures that were published quite a while ago by Louis Bohm in Switzerland, 1962. I just entered dental school. Okay, just kind of put a little reality here. And what you see, he made a series of coronal sections through embryos at very carefully staged intervals. These are human embryos. And what you're seeing here are some of the nicest pictures that you can have. What you're seeing here is a little structure that is marked as a quadrate. And here is a structure marked as an articular. And then you can go forward. Since it's a frontal section, Meckel's cartilage kind of disappears at this point out of view. In the same 8-week individual, if you were to go further forward, here is Meckel's cartilage, and now you see an area of condensation right here, and the first beginning of a little bone plate. And he calls this very correctly the dentary, the D for dentary. Okay? So, as you know, the bone actually starts forming at 6 weeks, so this is already 2 weeks into the process. By 9 weeks, the bone has grown backwards up to a point where it's already in the area of the ramus. So what you're seeing here is a masseter muscle, and you see the bone which literally goes all the way from here to here, and it is in the area of the future coronoid process. Anteriorly, the same thing, you see again the dentary, this is the D for dentary, and Meckel's cartilage on the lingual side of it. Now, look at it here. What is the difference? Here is one sheet of bone. Oops, going the wrong way. Here is a slightly later stage. At some point, the single plate of bone of the mandible forms a second plate on the lingual side. So now you get an extension. And so all of a sudden now you form a groove. And in this groove, you find the inferior alveolar nerve, the artery, and in the future time, a tooth will start to develop in here as well. Okay, so you start out with just this single plate on the outside, on the buccal side, but then you get this offshoot of bone that grows in this direction. Again, notice Meckel's cartilage is lying pleasantly here, minding its own business. Now, if you look very closely at Meckel's cartilage, what you're seeing here is this muscle. Anybody have any idea what this muscle is? Mylohyoid. Ah, it's working. Mylohyoid is attaching to Meckel's cartilage, as are most of the other muscles. The muscles, and especially the sublingual muscles, are all attaching to Meckel's cartilage. So Meckel's cartilage serves a very important function. It serves literally to attach the already functioning muscles in the sublingual region. And what happens is, eventually, Meckel's cartilage will disappear, and these muscles will begin to transfer their attachment to the mandible. But that is a secondary event. They start out hanging on to Meckel's cartilage. Meckel's cartilage really has a significant function at this point. Now, here comes the critical moment. At this time, at 10 weeks, we get into secondary cartilage period. And at 10 weeks, what you find is that within the periosteal envelope that is the mandible, you begin to see all of a sudden in one area, actually more than one, several areas, you're beginning to see an offshoot of cartilage. So all of a sudden, all of this was bone, and bone was forming nicely, and all of a sudden in some areas within that same periosteal membrane, a condensation of cell begins to form that now becomes cartilage. It sits in that same general mass. And that cartilage forms in response to the presence here. What is this? This is the membrane bone of the temporal bone. So the temporal bone is here, and now the mandible is approaching the temporal bone. It is undergoing motion, the muscles are contracting, the mandible is moving. And now in response to that movement, you get the formation of secondary cartilage, because it's now beginning to rub against the area where the temporal bone is beginning to form. Higher power of this shows you quite clearly here, this is cartilage, this is myelin cartilage. Secondary cartilage is myelin cartilage, like primary cartilage is. Now, this is not the only secondary cartilage that forms in this area at this time. This is the condyle, so you can see again, there's a good section through the condyle. Here is Meckel's cartilage, these are still coronal sections. And now, slightly further anterior, but still in the area of the ramus, what you're seeing here is a secondary cartilage here, and you see a secondary cartilage here. So what you find is that in that particular part of the mandible, there are several secondary cartilages forming. One is in the area of the coronoid process, one is in the area of the angular process of the mandible, and there will also be some secondary cartilages in the region of the symphysis. So they have a whole series of secondary cartilages. It's a diagram. It shows it up to a point. What they didn't have is the angular, but the angular can show. So in this area you can have coronoids, you can have condylar, you can have angular, and you have also a little bit of a mental or symphyseal secondary cartilage. The thing that you must remember is that all these secondary cartilages will eventually disappear because there is no longer motion to maintain them. The only one that will stay permanently, God willing, is the condylar cartilage, because motion there, if you live and you function normally, will continue. And so the condylar cartilage will be maintained by the motion of the temporomandibular joint. All the other secondary cartilages will very quickly disappear. And to show you how quickly, at least in the ramus, it happens really quickly. Here is that piece where you had cartilage. It's gone, okay? And here is still some secondary cartilage, but it's going. But here, the condyle is doing fine. It's doing just fine. And what you now may notice is that there is a joint space even forming. So, time-wise, by 10 weeks in development, you get the secondary cartilages. By 12 weeks, at least in the ramus, the condyle is the only secondary cartilage that survives. And at this point, you also begin to develop a joint space in the temporomandibular joint. Now, this cartilage, this condylar cartilage, is kind of very close to the bone of the mandible, the membrane bone of the mandible. And where those two tissues meet, the secondary cartilage and the mandibular bone, you begin to get endochondral ossification process. And so what you typically find in endochondral ossification process, let's figure it out. There is hypertrophy of chondrocytes, which is evidence of their terminal differentiation. And then in the extracellular matrix, you get a modification, removal of the chondroitin sulfates, deposition of type 10 collagen, and the formation of matrix metalloproteinase 9 in this case, which is involved in the breakdown of some of the matrix components. And what you get as a result is mineralization and subsequent resorption. Why do I hammer on this? Because what I didn't say was that the chondrocytes form cell columns. And you would have said, I bet, if I had asked you, tell me what the characteristics are of endochondral ossification, you would have started, well, there is a zone of proliferation, and there is a zone of maturation, and there's hypertrophy, and you would have given me the whole very accurate description of endochondral ossification in a growth plate. But what I'm now telling you is that endochondral ossification, in its boiled down to its essential elements, does not have growth columns, cell columns. You find them in a growth plate, but it is unique to growth plates. Most other areas where endochondral ossification is occurring in secondary cartilages, for example, you find hypertrophy and change of extracellular matrix. Those are the real changes that occur, and that's what endochondral ossification is characterized by. Those are the essential elements. The little cell columns in the growth plate are a nice addition, which is unique to growth plates. So what you get in the cartilage of the condyle is something that looks like this. Now, here is the temporal bone. This is now a coronal section again. Here is the area of the future disc. You don't see the disc yet. It's the condensation. There are no joint spaces yet. But you're beginning to see here, now you all know that this here, this dark line, is the fibrous layer of periosteum, huh? So the fibrous layer of periosteum is quite clearly marked here. That's running around here. And it continues right around here. The cartilage is sitting in that same area. But you notice here is just about here is where the two structures are facing each other. The membrane bone here, very nice, very delicate little trabeculae. And here is the condylar cartilage. And where these two meet, the condylar cartilage is beginning to undergo endochondral ossification. And that bone that is formed as a result of endochondral ossification becomes part of the condylar process. All right, I'm going to show you a few pictures here. These are three-dimensional reconstructions. They are taken from some eminent ENT specialist that did a lot of work on the development of the mandible and, of course, of the middle ear, which is what they really were interested in. And what you're seeing here is in 3D at 9, 11, and 14 weeks. This is 9, this is 11, and this is 14. What you're seeing here is, first of all, in dark, Meckel's cartilage. And then what you're seeing here is, this is 19 weeks already. Mistake here, folks. This is 9, 11, and 14. What you see here is Meckel's cartilage. And then gradually you see the mandibular bone forming around it. First, the Meckel's cartilage lies very much separate and lingual. And it stays separate and lingual in some areas, like here. But in other areas, it begins to be hidden by the overhang of that second sheath of membrane bone of the mandible. But some areas, like here anteriorly, Meckel's cartilage becomes surrounded by the bone. This is very interesting. All right. And slightly later, older than 19 weeks, what you're seeing here now is the trough, the bony trough. This is the buccal plate on the outside. This is the lingual plate, that secondary piece of bone that formed. Here is the space between where the teeth are going to develop. You see already some little individual sockets beginning to develop here. Here are areas of secondary cartilage. You're not responsible for it. Just notice it in passing. And then here you see Meckel's cartilage over here. You see the inferior alveolar nerve. And then you see gradually the nerve disappearing, but the cartilage still outside here. This is still Meckel's cartilage. And then over here, all of a sudden, it gets swallowed up by the developing bone. Keep that thought in mind, because we have to talk about what happens to Meckel's cartilage next. Okay, back to the condylar cartilage. What you're seeing now here in the condylar cartilage, this is a typical image of the condylar cartilage of a late fetal or young newborn individual. And typically what you find is in the condylar cartilage, you're seeing a fibrous zone. This is not cartilage. It may be fibrocartilage, but mostly it is just plain old fibers, collagen fibers. Then here is an area that looks like pre-chondrogenic area, cellular area. Here is cartilage. And almost immediately the chondrocytes here becoming hypertrophic. No columns, okay? No columns. This is the typical way in which the condyle undergoes endochondral ossification. Any articular cartilage undergoes endochondral ossification, perfectly normal. Something else that you might notice, and you know, this is something that we can argue about. You see here two layers, an outer fibrous layer and a cellular layer. Where have you heard that before? It's a little bit like perichondrium, a little bit like that. And if you think about it that way, I don't think you're that far off, okay? But please remember that this fibrous layer is at the same time the articular surface. So it's not quite like perichondrium. Don't make the mistake of calling it perichondrium, but the structure is very similar. All right, now let's see what we have here. Here is a typical area. This is an articular disc. And here is the typical morphology of condylar cartilage. It is an articular cartilage. Fibrous zone, cellular zone. Here is the cartilage cells. And you see that almost immediately, once the chondroblasts become chondrocytes, almost immediately they are beginning to hypertrophy. It doesn't take very long. Doesn't take very long at all. This is the typical thing that you find. Now, how does that compare with a regular hyaline articular cartilage? Most of the body, not all, the joints in most of the body are showing like this. So this is, they have a hyaline articular cartilage, and you see here slightly cellular layer, and then there are more and more chondrocytes, and here again, very quickly, the chondrocytes become hypertrophic, and you have endochondral ossification. When you compare the histology of the mandibular condyle with that of any other articular cartilage, the only difference is this top fibrous layer. Okay? That's really the principal difference. But I must warn you, despite the fact you will get many a time when you read the dental literature, somebody will try to tell you that the condylar cartilage is unique because it has this fibrous layer on top. It's not unique. There are several other articular cartilages in the body, including the articular cartilage of the clavicle where it meets the sternum, where you have exactly the same histology. So articular cartilages can be covered by fibrocartilage, which this is ultimately going to be, or they can be covered by hyaline. 95% of the joints have hyaline cartilage covering, but there are other joints that have the same thing that the mandibular condylar cartilage has. There's always the tendency to try to think of the mandibular condylar cartilage as a growth plate cartilage. And why is that? Because we have this cartilage sitting here on top of the mandible, and we like to think that it is doing enormous things for the growth of the mandible. It helps with part of the growth of the condylar process, but it is the comparison with growth plate cartilage is incorrect. Okay? So please make that point. Condylar cartilage is not like growth plate cartilage. It's like articular cartilage. And the reason for that is that the growth plate cartilage is much more highly differentiated by having these cell columns. It's a structure that is highly adapted for very rapid and major amounts of growth. The condylar cartilage does contribute to the growth of the mandible, but it's very minimal. It's not really huge. So, the basic statement that I have to make here is that condyles are like articular cartilages, not like growth plates. And I put here my favorite growth plate of rabbits, six-week-old rabbits, that grow unbelievably, okay? There's nothing like it. So, the condyle has no chondrocytic mitosis. The mitoses occur only in this layer, in the prechondroblast layer. Once the cells become chondrocytes, they no longer undergo mitosis. In contrast to here, where of course you have mitosis in the proliferative layer. So that's a very, very distinctive thing. And that causes the structure of cell columns, which you don't have in the mandibular condyle. Okay, what is the contribution of the condylar process to the mandible? Well, remember, the mandible starts out as a real small structure, somewhere down here. And then, of course, it grows in all directions. And as it grows, the condylar cartilage leaves a trail of endochondral bone behind it. And so when you look at the outline of a mandible in a newborn, you have this carrot-shaped structure here that is formed by endochondral ossification. And in fact, you can see it. We have a section in our slide box that looks like this. Is a section, a sagittal section of a neonatal mandible. And what you're seeing here is the outline of the coronoid process. I see nice, delicate little trabeculae here, and all nicely intermembrously formed. Here is the angular process, same thing. And then here you have this big galoop that has considerably larger trabeculae. It's formed differently. It's formed in a different orientation. This is the bone formed by endochondral ossification. Okay? So you can actually see that very clearly. And if you ever have to make a radiograph of a newborn mandibles, of a newborn's mandible, you will see exactly that. You can actually see that carrot-shaped structure still clearly outlined in the bone of the mandible. All right, I will now finish up by talking about the pharyngeal cartilages and what they become. We have in effect kind of mentioned the first arch cartilage, Meckel's cartilage. We have mentioned the stapes and the incus and the malleus. Let's now put them all together, and I'm particularly going to concentrate on the cartilages of arches 1, 2, and 3. 4 and 6 are part of the laryngeal cartilages. They are less well defined, but the first three arches have very distinctive cartilages. And the first thing that you have to realize is that each arch has a posterior cartilage which is separate from the anterior cartilage. So there's always a posterior cartilage in each pharyngeal arch. And it is a separate structure from the anterior cartilage, and frequently a joint is formed between the two. Now, looking at this, this is of course a side view, and this is a horizontal projection. And what you're seeing here is the outline of the articular and the quadrate that we already discussed, and then extending from the articular, you have the bar that is Meckel's cartilage, that we have called Meckel's cartilage. This is known as Reichert's cartilage. If you ever come across it in the literature, you should recognize it. So this is Meckel's, and the other one is Reichert's. The other cartilages have no names, but these have names, and they frequently are used. So when you look in this horizontal view, what you find is the first formation of the mandible, which we call here dentary. Right. Now, what are all these pieces of cartilage going to become? Well, let's first look at somebody's diagram. This is Inger Kjær, who did this. You have that in your manual. And what you're seeing here, this in gray is Meckel's cartilage, in black is the mandible. You.
I'm sorry, what did you say was Reichert's cartilage?
Reichert's is one second, this anterior cartilage of the second arch. Okay? Reichert's cartilage is the anterior cartilage of the second arch. I'm sorry I didn't make that clear. Okay, now let's look at this, these cartilages. These, of course, are all horizontal views. Meckel's cartilage, this is earliest, and here, of course, is the latest. This is 5, and all the others are in between. And you see the mandible forming originally on the buccal side of Meckel's cartilage. That's the dark outline. And then you begin to see a second outline here on the lingual side. That's the beginning of that little bony trough that is beginning to develop. It starts out here, and by the time you get to this point here, you see these two pieces of bone, which of course you know are coming together at the bottom, and they're forming this groove in which the inferior alveolar nerve is located and where the teeth are going to be located. And here in this final picture here, you see the beginnings of the alveolar spaces where the teeth are developing. Notice also something very interesting. At this point, between here and here, something has happened. And what has happened here is that the palatal processes have come together and have closed. So the secondary palate here is forming. And what happens as a result of the secondary palate forming, the whole shape of the lower jaw changes. It's something that it's marginal to what we're talking about here. But I wanted to see how the Meckel's cartilage started out like this, and all of a sudden it makes this funny little curve. And that funny little curve now, you have a situation here where this cartilage is actually being incorporated in the developing mandible. Okay, so that's a very interesting little shape. Now, what does the cartilage going to be? What is it going to be? First of all, what you find is this here and this here, as you know, are going to become the malleus and the incus of the middle ear. How? By endochondral ossification. So the joint of the first arch cartilage is going to undergo endochondral ossification, and it becomes the incus and the malleus. Okay, here is the lovely picture. I like it. It's very poetic. This is the malleus, this is the incus, and of course here is the stapes. Now, what happens to the rest of Meckel's cartilage? Zippo, zilch, zero. In other words, it undergoes resorption, Meckel's cartilage eventually is being removed, but without replacement. There is no replacement. The cartilage just gets resorbed. There is only anteriorly, right here where that cartilage is surrounded by the mandibular bone, there the cartilage will participate in the endochondral ossification process. So there will be some endochondral ossification here, essentially in the area of the canine, if you want a specific location. So endochondral ossification in this area where the canine is located and where the mandible surrounds Meckel's cartilage. That is the one area that we are all in agreement about. The rest of the cartilage here, nothing. Okay, it just disappears. In fact, there are some other areas that we have to be concerned about, and that is, so we have already endochondral ossification over here and over here. We have resorption without replacement here and here. Here again, endochondral ossification, fine, that's all done. But what is this here? What this is here, this is an area where the cartilage is being subjected to tension. And where it is being subjected to tension, the cartilage gradually becomes proportionally less important, while the collagen fibers inside are becoming more important, and what you're doing here, you're forming ligaments. So there are two ligaments that are being formed in the area between where the malleus forms and in the area where it's just going to resorb. Anterior ligament of the malleus, and the sphenomandibular ligament. Where does the sphenomandibular ligament attach? The lingula of the mandible, exactly. So this is where the lingula of the mandible is. That's how much of Meckel's cartilage is going to be transformed into ligaments. And right where the lingula starts and where the Meckel's cartilage just would continue forward, it would be this, literally resorbed without replacement. Correct. So now that we know that, now that we know what happens with Meckel's cartilage, let's now look at the second cartilage. The second cartilage will undergo endochondral ossification and become the stapes, the posterior part here. And then you have some other structures that will undergo endochondral ossification. One, to form the styloid process, that's the most proximal part of the second cartilage. And this little bit here, which is going to articulate with the cartilage of the second arch, of the third arch, this becomes the lesser horn of the hyoid bone, endochondral ossification. And the cartilages, the anterior and posterior cartilages of the third arch, are also undergoing endochondral ossification. What you have in here is four cartilages in the third arch, two anterior, two posterior, and two cartilages from the second arch. And these six cartilages all undergo endochondral ossification and all come together to make what we now know as the hyoid bone. It's a very complicated process. The spatial relationship between those cartilages, I hope, makes it clear how that is possible. And that is the story that I wanted to tell you. It's a fascinating story. The development of mandible is without question one of the most fascinating topics that you can study. I hope you will enjoy learning about it.